Hello and welcome to Wellness Unfiltered Pro. We're honored to have you with us for this special 50th anniversary episode as we celebrate 50 years of biotics research.
Hello, everybody. My name is Paul Vidiello, and I'm the marketing director at Biotics Research. Today, we have a special podcast for you guys, 50 years of biotics research. Biotics Research was founded in 1976, and it is time for our 50-year story. I have the two founders and owners with us today for the podcast. We have Dennis DeLuca, the president of Biotics and founder, and we have Daryl DeLuca, our vice president and founder as well. So welcome, guys. This is a really highly requested podcast. So hopefully we get to answer a lot of people's questions on the history of Biotics, and hopefully we can do that in 45 minutes. So we'll get started. So 50 years of Biotics. Dennis, how can you tell me the story of how the company was founded?
Well, sure. We were out in California, where all the founders were born. And really, it goes back really to our cousin, Blokey, who in the late 50s was diagnosed with Hodgkin's. And our dad started reading everything that was humanly possible. And because the prognosis here in America was, get your affairs in order, you're going to die. He was a young man. So my dad read a lot and found some potentially interesting treatments in Germany. And so he ultimately started sending my cousin Blokey and my grandmother over to Germany. Of course, in 1960, when they were doing some of this travel, it wasn't as easy going overseas as it is today. You know, today you jump on an airline, you get a few bad meals and a movie, and you're there. But it was very difficult at the time. The kicker was that you could only bring back a limited amount of medicinals. And while they felt that they were, and these were nutritional products, but they felt that these were beneficial. And we felt that Blokey had a better quality of life, but it was still tragic. He died the day he was supposed to get married. And so while a tremendous family tragedy, it led to something much bigger, which was Biotics Research Corporation.
Yeah, he clearly lived longer than he was projected to. And I believe the quality of his life was better. He had already gone through the cut and burn phase of everything. And so we had witnessed that as young children. And it was pretty dramatic to see. But I believe his quality of life was improved for an extended period of time, not multiple years, but maybe like a year or two longer than he was supposed to.
Yeah, especially for back then, that was a lot. Yeah. Well, yeah. The first time I met you guys, I don't know, whatever it was, 9 years ago, you showed me the picture of your father on the wall, and your father was obviously a founder along with you guys. So, you know, obviously that happened. And then how did you guys get the idea now to actually start producing supplements?
Well, you know, what happened was at that point, again, we started looking at, you know, a lot of possibilities. And my dad was maybe a little frustrated with the idea that Americans had to go to other countries to find treatments. And so we started looking at what we might be able to do here to help people. And it was a long process, but he became very well read and really learned a lot about the industry. There wasn't really an industry. You have to understand that, you know, back in the early days, even into the early 70s, there wasn't a dietary supplement industry like we see today. You know, back in those days, we're talking about cod liver oil and, you know, maybe a product that had iron in it. And they said, you know, 20% of women needed iron. That wasn't really our direction. We were really looking at helping people that were really sick and that would benefit. And the idea of having to travel to other countries was not something that we thought should be the case.
So why don't we get into like some of the early days of, you know, at that point you met another founder who was the only non-family member, correct? Bill Sparks. And you took I remember the story, taking you all from in California. You got to tell that story.
Yeah. So Bill Sparks, we met Bill in Southern California. You're right. He's the only non DeLuca family member, Bill's family, but he's not a DeLuca. And Bill had been working, producing some dietary supplements in Southern California. And so we got together, we talked about our ideas and ideals and what made us tick and what got us excited, and ultimately decided to come to Texas and start setting up to produce some dietary supplements. At that time, Bill sold basically all his earthly possessions that he could. And Bill and I loaded up what he had in a U-Haul truck and hooked up his 1968 Volkswagen Bug to the back of it. And we headed for Texas. And it was an interesting trip. And that's kind of where it started.
You know, I also love the story when you guys really first got started, when you were, you know, you were actually producing the supplements yourselves and saying, you know, we would produce and then we would get enough money and, you know, do the next lot. And
sure.
Yeah. Just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, in the very beginning, first, we recognized that we really needed to dial in delivery systems, because back then, you know, you might have a 450 milligram tablet with 25 milligrams of actives and, you know, the rest is chemical binders and fillers. And so we didn't see that as our path. We wanted to look for value added benefits, which led to the development of the biologically active vegetable culture tableting base, which is so important to us today. But yeah, you're right. You know, in the earliest days, you know, I would count out 90 tablets and put them in a bottle and put them on a scale. And then I'd put an empty bottle and keep adding tablets until they balanced. And that was one bottle loaded. And I kept all of our books on a yellow notepad. And, you know, when we needed bottles, we'd save up enough money and I'd get in the Volkswagen and drive over to the bottle distributor and buy a box of bottles and come back. And here we go again. And some of those earliest products are still really important products to us today. You know, the original six products, two of them are still very important. Intenzyme Forte being one of those, it's still a top 10 product and we don't advertise it, but just the results are amazing.
And one of the other ones was an emulsion product, right, too?
Absolutely. Well, so again, we were looking at delivery systems. And so we developed emulsified, microemulsified delivery systems for oily nutrients, you know, A, D, E, K, and today CoQ10. And so we did the vegetable culture tableting base. We did that. And then we also learned different coating techniques. But absolutely, those were some of the earliest products that are still important to us today.
And with the emulsions too, like we, you know, in the last, you know, decade, we came out with more emulsified products. So, you know, the DK and then actually emulsifying the DK into the capsule, which I thought was really cool when we come out with that. That product is doing really well. The Bio DK caps, it continues to grow. And that's based on technology that was developed, you know, in the 70s, late 70s.
Yeah. Mid 70s. We started really our development work aggressively. We started, the ideas started in 74, but we really started the development work in a big way in 75, and we started producing our first products in 76.
You know, I always like the story of rags to middle class too. I think, you know, talking about those humble beginnings, you know, make for a good story. You know, and especially with Bill with the rabbits, I think that's, you know, we should probably go there next.
Well, yeah. So rags to middle class is how we like to project ourselves. Yeah. Bill was sleeping on the floor in the animal room with the rabbits, and I was sleeping on the floor at my dad's place. At that time, there were only three of us that were full time, and we were giving nutrients to these rabbits, and the rabbits were just incredibly healthy. And when we finished what we were looking to do there, we donated those rabbits to somebody who wanted to raise them. Well, lo and behold, in a matter of weeks, those two rabbits were entered into the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, which is a massive, massive global event. And of those two rabbits, one took first place and one took third place. So some youngster that we donated these rabbits to got a lot of notoriety for that. But those were animals that we had, and they were Bill's roommates, because Bill slept in the room with them, because, you know, back then we cooked every meal on a hot plate, and it was really very humble beginnings.
You know, we hear a lot about a lot of the other companies in the industry, you know, kind of being spinoffs of other companies and that thing. And I always think it's impressive that Biotix has been a manufacturer always of his products and started off manufacturing, started off like basically doing it the right way with a few amount of products and scaling, you know, over 50 years. What do you have to say about that? I think it's a big thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, our story started with a family member who got sick. And so our origin is not that we worked for another company. We didn't work for another company, pioneer or steal their ideas, steal their technologies, steal their team, their customers. No, we were very organic in our humble beginnings. And so, we didn't come from that path. And so our direction was very different from the very beginning.
Yeah, I think, you know, what a lot of people that have been around Biotix a long time, whether it's customers or suppliers, you know, just talk about the integrity of the company. I think that has a lot to do with it, you know, is just the way that the company was built. You know, the family aspect of it obviously is huge. But when we can start getting into a little bit of, you know, we talked a little bit about the emulsions. The other product that we mentioned that Dennis was talking about was Intenzyme Forte, which is, you know, I think everybody's favorite products in the company. Nobody doesn't like that product. But why don't we get into CoQ10 and you know, some of the research around that and
one of the things, Paul, that I want to go back to is when we started, we were actually operating in a lab. So when we moved into our new facility, it was a 5,000-foot warehouse. It was empty. And we built it from the scratch, from the ground up. When I say we, I meant we. Okay. Yeah. We trenched the floors. We hired contractors to come in and make the connections on the plumbing so we could get it permitted. But we trenched the concrete and laid the pipe. We did all the sheetrock work in the building, but we did it all, right? And we always joke that we should have started doing the sheetrock. We should have started at the back and worked our way forward because we got a lot more skilled at that as we went along. But on day one in that facility, we had a lab. Now, it wasn't a lab like you see today at Biotix, but we had a small atomic absorption spectroscopy machine. We were doing UV spec. We were doing optical rotation. We were doing tests. We were still doing disintegration stuff and the basic stuff. But we had an ongoing QA lab at the very beginning, and that just wasn't happening anywhere.
Yeah, the lab is important. And I think, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about the, you know, the Biotix footprint. And I think it's kind of a good place maybe to enter this in here is, you know, you're talking about 5,000 square feet back then, right? And you look now and it's crazy because even, you know, in my time here, just seeing, you know, like the amount of square footage you need, it just continues to grow. I think, you know, we're at this point, it's somewhere around 200,000 square feet. So you're talking about, you know, at that time being 5,000 square feet. And then I love the stories when you guys talk about, you know, when you built, because I know the 5,000, I think that was that in Houston or Sherman or Stafford?
Yeah. That was in Houston.
Yeah. And then I think you moved to Stafford after that.
Yeah. We moved to Stafford. It was about almost 10,000 square feet.
But before we got to Stafford, we had five locations. Because we kept going, that 5,000 square foot that Daryl is correct. We pounded every nail and we built framed it. We did it all. And then as we kept growing and outgrew that, we kept getting little satellite locations all kind of spread around this part of town that we were in. Then we went to Stafford and we consolidated everything. And then from there, we expanded that facility four times. And then we built our first facility out in Rosenberg, Texas, about 28 years ago.
Yeah, and that's funny because when I remember hearing this from both of you guys at one point or other, when you first built 6801 Biotix Research Drive, you were like, you know, we're never going to need more space.
Right. Right. It was overwhelming building our first building, being an owner for the first time. And that building seemed so big. You know, I remember back then, you know, that dozens and dozens and dozens of trucks it took to move us. And we thought, oh my gosh, we've got so much space. But it wasn't that long before we had to expand that facility. And then once again, we started having other satellite locations. And then we built another facility, which is about 5 minutes away. Just a few years ago, it was completed. And once again, it seems like we have an awful lot of space, but we've also got enough land to add almost another 70,000 feet to this building.
Yeah.
And we still have 6801 Biotics Research Drive, which is our operations facility. And then the facility at 5245 Business Park Drive is our front office, accounting, marketing, shipping, those kinds of operations.
But now it's mostly about optimizing the space at 6801, right? With some new equipment that's been purchased and another big renovation that just, I think, is just about completed. It's just getting there, right? So
That one's just finishing up, but we have another one that we got to start. So it doesn't stop, you know.
But that renovation was a multi-million-dollar renovation, and we really, you know, every time you expand, unless you're careful, you lose efficiencies. So we actually retrofit the entire facility during these expansions, so we don't lose efficiencies, and. So that's been a great project over there. It's allowed the lab to expand dramatically because we do so much lab testing. Of course, today we've got ISO accreditation in our internal lab, and we've got NSF for the facility for the products that we do. And so we continue to expand. And our QC and QA now is, I don't know the exact number of people on QC and QA, but it's, I think it's north of 30 people just in those departments.
Yeah, and Daryl, the ISO story is a great one where, you know, you're bringing in ISO to accredit the laboratory, and they're like, "Wait, so who's your customer?"
Yeah, that was an interesting discussion because that was one of the things that they kept stressing was who are your customers, because, you know, essentially ISO is for commercial laboratories, and we just said, no, we're the customer. It's it's an internal thing, and they were like, this is weird. So we actually had to segregate, which kind of made sense. We segregated QA from QC. They're still part of the same QC team in general, but QC is all about the numbers, right? That's laboratory stuff. And QA is all about operations, right? Mm-hmm. So we just made QA the customer, and it moved on down the road. But we've had that now for a couple of years.
Dennis and I have had and I think all of us have had a conversation about this, is the industry is so hell-bent on third-party testing. And to me, it doesn't really make any sense, because I feel like the capabilities that Biotics have is a third party. You know, like, people get their products sent out because they don't have the lab capabilities to test their products, because nobody would want to send out to a third party and get in those delays in your actual production and the cost that's added into it. I mean, it's dramatic. And I just, you know, to me, it's a big thing. I don't think that people understand what it means to have basically a third party accredited lab in your building. You know, I don't think that people understand.
It makes things, it speeds up the process. You know what you're looking for. You know what you're doing. Look, when we started back before Deshaya, right? There was a time in the early 90s when we were looking at, when the government was looking at turning botanicals into drugs, okay, regulating them as drugs. And we decided at that point that if that possibility was ever going to come into fruition, we wanted to be the people that could still be standing. And so we took on the challenge of developing testing protocols and procedures for botanical products, which really didn't exist much back then. You know, in research labs and stuff it did, but in the production world it really didn't. And so we decided to aggressively move forward is looking at botanicals and looking at how to identify what they were, what the active principles were, and how to develop testing methods to validate all that work. It took a long time. It was a big leap, and it really changed things, we think, in the industry.
Yeah,
and
I don't even think people understand like what we're even talking about too, because for botanical testing is so hard, and there's only a few labs out there that really do it, you know, in that way, and they're more specialized labs. Me and Daryl were at a conference, and we ran into Mark Blumenthal, who's head of the American Botanical Council, and we told him that this is what we do, and he didn't believe us when we first told him. He was like, there's no way that you guys have a catalog of herbs going back that many years. And we were like, no, we do. And I remember that conversation.
Well, we were actually at one point, we were actually contracted with an organization. And again, this is before Dechea, but it was a concern about going forward with the regulatory stuff, where there was a consortium of companies, large companies, right? We're talking Fortune 500 companies, right? They were wanting to develop methods for testing botanical products. And they came to us to, the idea was for us to validate their work because they saw some of the things that we had actually published along those lines. And they said, hey, you guys are doing this. You know, is this something you can participate with? But at the end of the day, they were just dragging their feet. I mean, in 2 years, they had done like a couple of products. And then in that period of time, we had done like 600. So yeah. It was just different.
This is a good segue into the next thing that I think I wanted to cover, which was Love Canal and talking really about more like testing being in our DNA. I think Daryl covered it a little bit. We're talking about, you know, really that first facility that was built, we had a lab, but testing being in the DNA of biotics, I think the story of Love Canal is a good one for this moment.
So that's an interesting thing. I actually want to talk about that and some of the other work that we did. Even before that, we were actually producing reagent grade enzymes that were being sold to the reference suppliers. So when universities would want to do a study on something like superoxide dismutase, we were actually producing it, putting it in ampules or little vials and selling it in microgram quantities. And they would sell it to the universities that were doing that. But that was kind of in the lead up before Love Canal. We opened up a genetics lab. We sold 19% of it to investors and we owned 81% of it. And Love Canal is a place in New York that, you know, in the late 70s, there were concerns about the community that was built on top of a former chemical dump. And it got really pretty ugly. There was one period of time where, I believe this number is correct, at a 22 burst, there was about two normal kids. And it was getting a lot of attention in the media. And the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, hired us to do the genetic risk assessment at Love Canal. You didn't really need to be a geneticist to know that there was a problem when you have that kind of problems in the births. But people also just had chemicals percolating into their basements or explosions in their yard. But then they hired us because we had one of, if not the only, but certainly one of very few mobile genetics teams. And Bill Sparks, who we mentioned earlier, who's one of our founders, he was part of that team that went up there and collected the samples. Well, it was kind of a political football because, the state of New York really didn't want that kind of publicity. And I won't get into all the gory details, but I can tell you one time we had to hire the sheriff's department to keep all the reporters out. We actually had our parking lot catered. And this is like, you know, 1979, 1980. And it was really a big deal. And it boiled down to an argument about the science. And geneticists from all over the world came to biotics and saw what happened. And I don't want to get too much into the negotiating with the federal government and the state of New York. But ultimately, it was agreed that the study was actually proper. And it was actually on the cover of Time, Newsweek, and U.S. News and World Report. But it was overshadowed by Mount St. Helens that blew that same week. This was a huge story. It blew the top off of this, and it ultimately led to the formation of the Superfund that was developed by the federal government to clean up the 52,000 chemical dumps in the United States at that time. So it was really impactful. And even today, when we sign a lease and we see the environmental language, a lot of it came out of that time period and that study. And so it's been a big thing. And it was, well, my brother in California said, hey, I saw you on television. Well, again, I don't want to get into all the negotiating, but certainly there were those officials that did not want this information being reported. It ultimately was reported. And the federal government actually bought every home at Love Canal and put a chain link fence around it. And if you were to go to the Smithsonian, you'll see satellite pictures of Love Canal. Now, we understand in the years and decades since then they have remediated some of that. And I think people are now living back in Love Canal. I don't know all that for sure, but it was a really big thing. But, it led to other things for biotics research, because the tissue culture media that we used to grow those cells was fetal calf serum. And so that led to a range of glandulars that were neonatal glandulars. The animals were not harvested for us, but we learned of them. And we always looked at glandular therapy as kind of a poor man's cell therapy. You might remember many decades ago, the rich and wealthy would go to Switzerland and get injections of sheep cells to make them younger, like cells going to like cells. And so one research product led to another, which led to another, which led to another. And that's been part of our history. You know, research, it's not just our middle name. It's kind of our corporate culture and our way of life.
Yeah, I was going to get into that next, the research not being the middle name. And a lot of the firsts that come along with biotics, including CoQ10, which I think is a great story. I don't know.
I'm happy to talk about CoQ10 unless you'd like to. I'm happy to do it.
You know, CoQ was it was actually discovered at the University of Wisconsin. It was work that was being funded by Merck at the time. But anyway, at the end of the day, nobody in the United States was really interested in it. Okay. And but the Japanese were. And so they took that science and they decided to utilize it, and coenzyme Q10 wound up being a frontline therapy for congestive heart failure and for other cardiac diseases. But it was a drug over there, right? And we were able to show that CoQ was actually found in the diet, and therefore we should be able to isolate it and provide it as a dietary ingredient. Problem was, you couldn't bring in CoQ, right, which was being produced synthetically in Japan. So what we actually had to do was produce it ourselves. It took us thousands of pounds of heart tissue to extract 1 kilo of CoQ from it. Not exactly the most economic and even environmentally friendly way to do it. It was the only way to do it at the time, right?
Was it beef heart?
From beef heart. Right. Yeah. So we were extracting it from there, and then we were actually micro-emulsifying it so we could increase the uptake and utilization of it. Now, years later, once we started doing it, everybody else started getting interested in it. Right. And then after a while, they were able to bring it in because we had already shown that, hey, this is a food ingredient. So now everybody, they could bring it in. Now, there were some battles about that, but it got done. Problem was, it was all synthetic and we didn't want to use that. Finally, though, somebody started producing it from a fermentation process, and they were able to do it in a much more environmentally friendly way than we could do it as an extraction process, and a lot more cost effective way. So at that point, we started purchasing from them. But make no mistake about it, we're the guys that started in the supplement industry.
Yeah. If I could add to that, Paul, for a timeline perspective, we're talking 1978.
Yeah,
when we started producing CoQ and selling it, we're the first company to sell it in the United States. I know that some big names would like to make that claim, but they're sometimes as much as a decade and a half after us. Maybe they would be accurate if they're talking about it was commercially available, because like Daryl said, it was not commercially available. And so biotics did what we always do. We figured out how to make it ourselves. And in fact, when it looked like CoQ was going to get blocked at the docks, during a period of time where the FDA did not appear to want to let it come in, our FDA attorneys asked us, well, will you provide it to the other companies? And we said, well, we don't really have the capability to make that much, but why do you ask? Because we know what you're going to do, and you're going to produce it for yourself. And some of our other customers would like to have access to it. Fortunately, things changed. It became commercially available and more economic. But going back to the earliest days, we started selling coenzyme Q10 in 1978.
Yeah.
And we emulsify it for greater absorption.
Yep. And Daryl, going back into research, one of the things that I think is extremely important and unique to biotics in this industry, especially being a family owned company, is we call it the 6.5 patents, but the patents that have been issued to biotics research, it's crazy to me that more and more research isn't being done. We go to conferences all the time that say consumers want more research. Well, Biotics has been doing it for a long time, and these patents are pretty impressive, especially one being, you know, one of our best selling products as well. But Dale, you want to get into a little bit about the patents? I think it's a good place to go there right now.
Well, you know, there's a lot of things that we've done a number of patents. You're right. We've done patents where we've worked with other entities to develop them. There was a patent that was developed by a gentleman that was the director of the Science Park at MD Anderson Research Center in Smithville. And at the time, he was also the editor of Molecular Carcinogenesis. But, you know, the patents go to the people who develop the product, but then they get assigned to the entity, right? So it wound up the patent on this product was for, I got to be careful how I say this, I guess. The study that led to the patent was on preventing skin cancer, okay, in an animal model. And we worked with them very, very closely. And they actually came to us to participate in this because they saw some other work that we had done and had presented articles on, and they said, hey, you're looking at that, you're already doing stuff that we're looking at, so let's instead of reinventing the wheel, let's get you guys involved with us. So that was one where we collaborated with the university, but the other ones we did pretty on our own or with another medical entity. We've got a couple of patents that we had done with the Hypertension Institute, St. Thomas University, which I believe is affiliated with Vanderbilt, and Dr. Mark Houston. We have a couple of patents that we did develop.
Talk about what the patents were for, real quick.
Well, they were in the arena of hypertension. We actually have two patents. And again, I have to be careful how I say this. Two patents, let's say they were for supporting healthy blood pressure levels. Let me put it that way. Okay. Those are still effective. We also have patents on a unique compound that we developed, it's some stuff that was coming out of the benefits that we were seeing in some of our vegetable cultures and trying to figure out what it was. So we decided to spend some time looking into that, and we developed what we call a product called PhytoLens, which was an isolate from a compound that we were making. And it had very impressive antioxidant capabilities. And in vitro models, it quenched free radicals better than grapeseed extract or eicotrienol, okay? And it's a very, very stable compound. And if you're taking those vegetable cultures in our tableting base, you're actually getting some of that as a value added that is just part of the matrix. Mm-hmm. So it's something that benefits people as they're getting benefit from, and they don't even realize it generally. We also have patents that we develop with other clinicians. Everything's from I've got to be very, very careful because the way the patents are worded, I'm going to get myself in a little bit of trouble. But the patents are issued for dealing with challenges associated with acid reflux. We have patents associated with antioxidant compounds. I'm trying to think of a couple more. We have one patent that is for normalizing testosterone levels in middle-aged men that have low levels. It's not something that you're going to give to a jock to, you know, go out and become a roid head kind of thing. It just brings the testosterone levels up into the normal range. And we actually did that one a number of years ago. We also have a patent for eradicating parasites and amoebas in humans. It's research projects that we've done with worked in collaboration with different clinicians, and they've proven to be very, very successful.
And Dennis, you have anything to add to that? Yeah.
Can I add something to that? Yeah. You know, and Daryl is right. And it's very difficult to get patents on botanical products. And we've been successful in doing that in a number of occasions. But, you know, one of the things on the commercial side that I want to talk about is a lot of times you'll see a dietary supplement that may have a patent number on the front of the label. And that is generally a patent on a raw material they buy from a company who has the patent. So theoretically, anybody who buys that product can put that patent number on their product. when we talk about patents, we're talking about patents on products that we've developed that have shown efficacy in these challenging arenas. We are not talking about where we buy a raw material that has a patent and we claim our product is patented. We're talking about the real deal here, the real McCoy.
Patents that actually been developed by Biotics Research.
Yeah.
I think that's important.
It's a big distinction.
Yeah. Well, and especially, you know, the amount of consumers coming into the market and not knowing, you know, even doctors, you know, not really knowing the difference, right, between what a patent is on a raw material. You know, and we use some of those raw materials as well. So it's not like, you know, it's not, we're not saying anything bad about them.
We're just saying,
we know they all do a lot of work to get patents on their raw materials. And you guys probably know best how much work they actually have to do in order to get them. So, but we do a lot with those ingredients as well, but we like to promote our patents as well. I think it's important for people to understand.
One little statement here, which is, you know, you start to look back at the work that we've done over the last 50 years, and we've introduced many ingredients that become staples of the industry, CoQ being one that's very visible. But, you know, I'm pretty comfortable saying that really, I'm not sure that there's a dietary supplement company out there of any significance that has a large range or a range of dietary products that have not benefited from the research and development sponsored and oftentimes directed by Biotics Research. You know, so many of the things that we've done have become important to the industry. And, you know, we don't always stand up and shake our hands and ask for credit for it. But really,
we've
led the development that the entire industry has benefited. Just like when Daryl was talking about when the companies were trying to test botanicals and they came to us to validate their testing because we'd already validated so many botanicals. And they would say to us, well, you should just give all this information to the industry because it's the right thing to do. But that's very difficult for a small company like Biotics, who is spending such a huge proportion of our revenue on R&D and science, because we've always been based on science. And then these other companies were spending all their money on marketing and shiny labels and things like that. And so we refused just to give that away to the industry, because we invested in our infrastructure and our foundation, because we knew build a strong foundation and the building will never tilt. And so we did not just share all that, but we did validate the testing that they developed for them, because we already knew how to do it.
Yeah, I think talking about, like, you know, the humble beginnings of the company, but I think company in general is extremely humble. Like, not a lot of people know this about Biotics. I mean, just the vitamin D RDA is something that everybody benefited on in the industry. And that was obviously a lot of work and time and money spent by Biotics Research in order to get that work published.
I think we should touch on that a little bit and say what you're talking about. You know, vitamin D, it used to be that 400 IUs was the ideal amount based on labeling. And we did so much research in this area, and we came out and we were the first to publish that, at least I believe we were the first to publish, that was not a number based in science. And today I would probably tell you it was a made up number, because we argued that, you know, the number should be, you know, 10, 20 times that. And today you see pretty much every nutrition company and even food companies have gotten followed on the bandwagon from our work. Today you see, you know, 2000 IUs, or, well, we don't use IUs anymore, but 2000 IUs, 5000 IUs, 50,000 IUs. But it all started with Biotics Research publishing that 400 IUs was just completely inadequate. And that led to the whole vitamin D revolution that we all know and love today.
It was kind of interesting, because we were doing some work with MD Anderson. I was talking about that other work that we were doing, and they commented on that, about the 400 IUs being, there was really nothing to substantiate that. They thought the number should be higher. They didn't give us a number, but they thought the number should be higher. And then, of course, their thing was, it was a double-edged sword for them, because, you know, they were trying to protect people from skin cancer. So they're telling everybody to lather up with, you know, sunblock, but they're also saying, but if you're not out there running around in your skiddies, and being outside doesn't get it. I mean, you got to have skin exposure, right? To get vitamin D from sun. And they were saying, look, you know, people used to get it and they're not getting it now because they're all covered up, or else they're lathering themselves up with sunblock. And so they were interested in that, and they were kind of thinking the same way that we were, which I thought was very, very interesting at the time.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing that I wanted to touch on too, which kind of connects to this, is, you know, all the studies that have been done on Biotics products, some of them, you know, done by Biotics, but some not done by Biotics. There's quite a bit of it. I mean, Biotics has been around a long time, and the products, you know, have, you know, they're tried through the test of time, you know, especially a lot of these gut formulas. But I mean, we were talking about vitamin D, and then you have the clinical study that was done at Boston Children's Hospital, which is, you know, I think one of the best children's hospitals in the world. I don't just say that because I'm from Boston, but I think, you know, it is considered. We're not, I'm a Red Sox fan, they're Astros fans, but yeah, no, I mean, it's a landmark study.
They've got a reputation that is very well deserved.
You know, and it's crazy because if you go back into biotechresearch.com and log in and look at some of the abstracts and the papers, and there is stuff that goes back years. I mean, a lot of you guys might have heard about the SIBO study that was done at Johns Hopkins, you know, I think led by Jerry Mullen. You know, that study was done in 2014, you know, and those products are still around, still are bestsellers, you know, still doctors, I mean, can say nicer things about those products when it comes to SIBO or SIFO, Candida, or anything around those. But that's another, you know, a study that's out there. I mean, there's so many. There's another ADP study on Candida itself. I mean, you just look through the website and just look at the abstracts. I mean, it's pretty impressive. We try to do a good job of getting this stuff out there, but, you know, it's for a company like us, a family owned company, you know, we can only do so much. And I think, you know, we try to make sure that you guys understand, you know, all the research that go into these products. But it is quite impressive. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to mention one of the more recent products that we introduced that was developed in conjunction with Dr. Mark Houston, which we've done some other work with him. But I can't tell you how excited I am about Cardiolipid. You know, it's been an amazing product and is shown to support normalizing blood lipids. And the before and afters are just amazing. I mean, I got to be careful what I say, but.
Well, I mean, just the testimonials alone that we're getting on a daily basis from practitioners is impressive. I mean, we don't get this much excitement about a product. You know, we haven't in a while, like this much, where it's, you know, consistently getting, you know, the doctors are sending us their lab work of these patients, obviously with the patient names blacked out. But, you know, just sending, you know, you guys can use this as case studies. And we built a case study report, and it just keeps growing because, I mean, the product is just doing fantastic. And so, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. And, you know, working with doctors like Dr. Mark Houston, you know, and helping get some of their visions to life, and then seeing it out there and just watching the responses is incredible. It really is. So we talked a lot about the history. We talked about some of the early days, the patents, QAQC. We've hit on a lot of things that I wanted to hit on. We talked about the footprint, Love Canal. So within the 50 years of Biotics, we got to talk about the future, what the next 50 years looks like. I mean, we obviously talking from like an investment standpoint and all the equipment and the new building that's just been purchased and new product development, research that's currently being invested in. Actually, we're about to start a clinical study. So yeah, we're investing in it. So just talking about some of that stuff off the top of your heads, we didn't have anything planned out for this, but, you know, I think that talking about the future is, you know, is important.
Well, you know, Paul, when we talk about these, our first 50th anniversary, mm-hmm. because we're really just getting started. You know, the fairway is so wide open for us, the direction that we're going. You mentioned another clinical study that we're funding that's getting ready to get launched. That's another gut study. A lot of times people think that we're primarily a gut health company. And while we're incredibly strong there, and we lead the industry in many areas, including, we believe, SIBO, which you touched on, Dr. Jerry Mullen's work at Johns Hopkins. we got over 300 products. You know, we're strong in so many categories, you know, whether it's women's health, glucose metabolism. I mean, I could go on and on.
Yeah,
thyroid, brain stress, immune, yeah. Inflammatory microbiome. We are really a well-balanced company, but we continue to listen to the doctors and what the needs of their patients are, because it's really all about Ms. Jones and Apartment C. And so, you know, when we look to the future, we're so excited. You know, Daryl and I are two of the original six founders of Biotix. We're the only two that still come to work every day. But we come to work every day because we're incredibly excited. You know, we see the unknown tens and tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. We don't really know the number of people that are get a positive benefit from our products on multiple continents, because we're an international company. And it just excites us. It keeps us coming to work. It's, you know, I can't wait to get in. I can't wait to see what we're working on. And, you know, we work long hours, and it's not because we have to, it's because we want to. Because we're really excited about the direction we're going.
Yeah, I mean, big investments in Western Europe, though we've been in Western Europe for quite a while, but continuously entering new countries and new markets. That's been really exciting. I mean, you know, a lot of effort spent on Europe, and that's a lot of people don't even know. I get a question all the time. They're like, you guys sell in Europe? Like, what? Like, we didn't even know that. And it's like, well, for 35 years we have been, you know.
We're in Europe, we're in Canada, we're in parts of the Middle East, we're just getting started in India. You know, we continue to expand in Europe and in other parts of the world. Our focus is always on the domestic market here in the United States, but, you know, people need help all over the world. And we're thrilled that healthcare practitioners get a diagnosis. They're happy to recommend our products. And, you know, the circle of life is they get a good diagnosis. They buy safe and effective products from Biotix Research. Their patients feel better. They tell their friends. They feel the waiting. They fill the waiting room. And then the cycle continues, because it's all about getting people well. It's all about making people feel better and having a better quality of life.
Yeah. Listening to the practitioners about new product development is something that we certainly do. I mean, we're, you know, we have a pretty deep new product development, you know, list that we work on continuously. It just cycles. And a lot of it comes from the feedback from practitioners. And we, you know, some products are very internal, and they take a while for us to develop. And, you know, we continuously are working on new concepts and new ideas and new science. Obviously this gut study that he's talking about, is a completely new thing, you know, and that's something that's the reason why we feel the need to validate it, with a pretty large clinical study, that is about to start. So new product development, like, really never stops. I mean, really doesn't. But, you know, one other thing I want to hit on, which, you know, I didn't even think about, but I think it's really important, is like the family owned aspect and pricing. You know, we didn't even talk about this, but I feel like it's a big deal. I can, you know, comfortably say, or confidently say, I guess is the better way to say that, you know, Daryl does a lot of the pricing here at Biotix. So you have an owner that cares about the person and Ms. Jones and Apartment C. And that's a very important that, you know, it's with all the things that are going on in our industry, having somebody that really cares pricing out the products, you know, I think is an extremely important part of the Biotix culture. Not looking to make as much money as you possibly could just to make money, you know, and having it be priced at an affordable level. Daryl, you know, I think you should speak to that. I think it's really impressive on, you know, the integrity of the company when it comes to pricing out products.
Well, you know, look, everybody's got to make a living, right? Including us. But, you know, there are different stages of external events that drive certain things. COVID certainly was a disruptive period of time when it disrupted the supply chain. And there was a lot of dramatic price increasing going on in our industry. We held the line pretty well. Right. Other people were raising prices multiple times throughout the year and significant amounts. Some people were doing double digit increases multiple times throughout the year.
Same thing currently with tariffs. It's the same thing currently with tariffs. We haven't even had a price increase on tariffs.
We didn't do that. I mean, we did what we had to do to keep going, but you know, we didn't do that. And all those things continue to compound. You know, the fact you say, okay, well, we're going to do this big wave where we increase it, but now we're back to the, you know, the normal, you know, 2.5% or whatever. Yeah, but that's compounding on top of these other numbers that you did. People are still paying too much for some of this stuff, right? It's no different than it is with food and everything else. Yeah, the inflation rates are down considerably, but whatever they are, that's still compounded on top of what happened a few years ago. Those numbers never went away. It's not like you went backwards, right? So the same thing happens with the supplement industry. It's challenging to keep track of this stuff, especially now, because it's not, once upon a time, it was consistent. You know, everybody was looking at things the supplier information came through, you know, about the same time every year at the end of the year. Now prices are going up every day. You know, this thing's going up today. This one's going up tomorrow. And it's hard to keep up with, and it's hard to manage it, to keeping the prices in an affordable place. It doesn't do us any good to have a product that only rich people can buy. That's not who we are.
Exactly.
You know, I think it's also kind of important to note that, you know, some of these price swings right now, you know, we're in this era of uncertainty related to tariffs. And, you know, we've seen dramatic price increases, you know, sometimes 50%, sometimes less. And we have been holding the line. We've not done a price increase or price adjustment based on this new wave, because really, like Daryl said, it used to be kind of an annual event. People would let you know toward the end of the year in Q4 what you could expect in the next year. But today, it's every time you answer the phone, there's increases. And, you know, there will have to be adjustments, but every company must do that that produces anything. And so right now, we have not done an adjustment with the tariffs. And our customers are saying, when are you going to raise your prices? When are you going to adjust? Well, we're holding the line, but I need people to understand that, you know, it's not just raw materials that go up. You know, you might buy a piece of equipment that has a brand name like Bosch, which is a German brand and a highly respected brand, but it's produced in China under German specifications. And in so many other things, whether it's tooling or ballpoint pens or you name it, it's not just raw materials that are being affected. Now, you know, we are anticipating things, seeing things level off. We anticipate a better global environment in the future, but it's been a little bit hard right now to accept all of these adjustments and not pass them along. But again, we think a lot about Ms. Jones and Apartment C while we still maintain a need to be profitable.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty well known. I think everybody that is listening to this podcast can agree that, you know, our pricing is extremely competitive. And you know, my point in that is, you know, doing pricing out with Daryl at the end of the year, it's really does care about, you know, Miss Jones and Apartment C. And I think, you know, a lot is lost on companies that are owned by, you know, whether it be multinationals or whatever, that obviously don't have that same care about, you know, the end consumer as Biotics does, especially the way that this company was built over the 50 years. And, you know, and the deep relationships that you guys have built over 50 years, you know, with doctors, you know, is quite impressive. And I think, you know, you're still building relationships till this day. You know, we still have doctors come to the office, you know, all the time. We still go to trade shows, all around the country. And, you know, I mean, I can't tell you how many weekends, you know, we're all at trade shows together, but it's, you know, building those relationships is extremely important, right?
Well, and we want to go there. These doctors have become our friends and colleagues over decades, and we always look forward to meeting new doctors. We had a large number of doctors here just this last week. But, you know, the reason we go to the shows, that Daryl and I go to the shows, is we love meeting with the doctors. You know, again, like I say, so many of them become friends, and oftentimes they have good ideas, but it's nice to catch up. And we don't necessarily have to go do these meetings, but we do it because we love the interaction with the doctors.
Well, look, I think, you know, we've hit on a lot of things, and I think, you know, people are going to really enjoy hearing about the history of Biotics. But, you know, obviously, from my perspective, I think it's a great, you know, great honor to work for a company like Biotics. Congratulations on 50 years. I think, you know, it's very impressive, and there's not a lot of 50-year-old family-owned supplement companies out there. I don't even know if there are any, but I mean, especially in the professional channel. But anyways, it was great. Thanks for taking the time out. I'm sure that, you know, the practitioners are going to really enjoy listening to this and getting a little history on the 50 years of biotics research. So thanks, Dennis and Daryl, and thank you everybody for listening.
Thanks, Paul.